And hello, good Thursday afternoon here at Audio Journal. And it's 3 o'clock. And this program is intended for a print impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to community news covering the towns of Marlborough, Hudson, Harvard, Stowe, and Bolton. This program is sponsored in part by the Lions Clubs of Ashland, Bolton, and Harvard. And thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we'll be bringing you news from the Community Advocate, Harvard Press, Stowe Independent, and Bolton Independent. Today, we'll be reading from the Independent of Stowe and Bolton, the July 30th editions, and the Community Advocate, the 31st edition. And this is Tim Elms, along with Bob Brady, reading to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. And I'm going to start here. Can You Give This Pet a Home? By Sally Cragen. Meet Kirara, a young calico female cat whose litter has been raised. She now seeks a loving home for herself. Currently at Pat Brody Shelter for Cats in Lunenburg, volunteers report she is very gentle and loving and loves to talk. She is good with other cats and dogs. Kirara is Japanese for sparkling or shining, like mica. It is also used in reference to bright and eye-catching clothing, such as Kirara's black mask overlaying orange fur and a white bib underneath. Calico cats are known for their memorable crazy quilt coats and their intelligence. She's just 2 years old. And to learn more, visit CatsSouth at web.org and fill out an application form. And this one is Masters Academy International, Ready to Play Ball by Kristen Dijon. While it's not evident, as you pass the entrance to Masters Academy International, a lot of work has been going on at the old Bose campus to create the new Grade 6 through postgraduate sports-focused boarding and day school. The artificial turf athletic fields were completed this past week, and a planned basketball pavilion is going through the approval process. Masters Academy International, MAI, is on track for its planned fall opening, with enrollment growing steadily and construction running ahead of schedule, according to MAI co-founder Peter Masters, who presented an update at the June 23rd Select Board meeting. As of July 27th, Masters Academy International representatives noted that the school is approaching its inaugural enrollment target of 300 students. Students represent 28 states and include 31 international students. Approximately 75% of enrolled students will board on campus, while 25% will attend as day students. Masters said the school has hired 25 full-time teachers from more than 850 applicants. 11 faculty members hold doctoral degrees, while the remaining teachers have master's degrees and experience at universities and independent schools, including Harvard, Boston College, the University of California, Berkeley, Worcester Academy, and St. Mark's School. Town Administrator Denise Demkoski praised the school's collaboration with local officials, noting that fire and building officials have been conducting regular inspections and coordinating plans for the school's opening. She said Masters Academy has also offered local public safety officials access to security camera feeds, fitness facilities, and direct communication with key campus personnel. The school plans to hold a ribbon-cutting ceremony September 15th. Masters also told the board that CBS News 60 Minutes recently conducted a preliminary interview and is considering featuring the school in a segment that could air later this year. During the June 23rd meeting, Masters said that construction is approximately 2 weeks ahead of schedule on the baseball and basketball courts. The artificial turf athletic fields completed by July 28th, with baseball activities set to begin as athletes arrive for the September school opening. The baseball program touts state-of-the-art facilities that include two turf fields with lights and TrackMan, an indoor facility with a full infield, batting cages, mounds, plus a hack attack pitching machine. The MAI baseball program expects to take part in a 50-game schedule on the East Coast. Overall, the nine MAI athletic programs have hired coaches, and Masters announced that the school's basketball program has been admitted to the Nike Elite Youth Basketball League as one of 15 member teams. The EYBL is a top youth amateur athletic circuit featuring elite boys and girls travel programs, multi-session regular season play, and the annual Peach Jam Championship. On that front, the school is focused on the creation of a basketball pavilion. At a June 9th public hearing, MAI officials presented the Stowe Planning Board with an application to add a basketball pavilion and a new security gatehouse. Will Park, a principal and senior engineer and design firm SMMA, says the school hopes to break ground on the new additions by this fall at the latest, pending board approval. Construction is expected to take about 18 months to complete. And this one is, Bolton Fair returns August 14th through the 16th with 3 days of family fun, agriculture, and entertainment by Kristen DeJean. The Bolton Fair will return August 14th through the 16th for its 143rd year, bringing 3 days of agricultural exhibits, live entertainment, carnival rides, and family activities to the Lancaster Fairgrounds. One of New England's longest-running agricultural fairs, the event traces its roots to Bolton before relocating to Lancaster in 2004 to accommodate continued growth. Today, the fair spans 53 acres and attracts visitors from throughout New England, while maintaining its focus on agriculture, livestock, and community traditions. This year's entertainment lineup features returning favorites, including two demolition derbies, Saturday and Sunday, monster truck rides, a farm tractor pull, ATV racing and stunts, an acrobatic performance, family-friendly wrestling, and the always popular magic and hypnosis shows by Lance Gifford. There will be a Little Digger exhibit with lots of diggers. There are new music options, including a Friday night concert with country singer sensation Eva Ricci, who is originally from Stowe, and a popular local group, Disco Lemonade. There will be some new musicians in the beer garden, as well as some popular performers from the past, and a community drum circle during the kids' country show in the pavilion tent, along with juggling and music for kids. Agricultural demonstrations remain at the heart of the fair, with livestock exhibits, blacksmithing, woodworking, farmers market vendors, and educational displays highlighting the region's farming heritage. Families will find a variety of children's attractions, including Kids Country, a petting farm, carnival rides, and games, and numerous opportunities to interact with the farm animals. The fair will also feature craft vendors, shopping, food, concessions, an exhibit hall and showcase, and a beer and wine garden open daily from noon to 7 p.m. Alcoholic beverages must remain within the enclosed garden. Bolton Fair hours are Friday noon to August 14th and 16th, Friday noon to 9, Saturday 9 to 9, and Sunday 9 to 6. And this is in right to farm communities, beware of four-legged pedestrians. And this again by Kristen DeJean. Two wandering sheep in Bolton surprised motorists Monday morning after escaping from a nearby property along the Bolton-Stowe line. The sheep were spotted at around 7:30 a.m. July 27th near 108 Teal Road by Bolton resident Liz Camilleri, who took this photo, which you can't see, and said it was a surprise. They were so big, she explained to The Independent. I really first thought it was a bear, and I was in danger, not expecting to see that come out of the woods. Camilleri posted the photo on the Bolton Community Facebook page. Residents familiar with the area identified the animals as belonging to a nearby farm in Stowe, and they were later returned home. No injuries or traffic incidents were reported. While encounters with loose livestock are uncommon, they can occur in communities such as Bolton and Stowe, where farms remain an active part of the landscape. Both towns are designated right-to-farm communities, recognizing agriculture as an important local industry and encouraging residents and visitors to expect normal farming activities. Drivers traveling through rural areas are encouraged to use caution, particularly on winding roads with limited visibility. Livestock can be difficult to see around curves or in wooded areas and may move unpredictably if startled. Motorists who encounter loose farm animals should slow down, avoid sounding the horn or making sudden movements that would frighten the animals, and contact local police or animal control if it is safe to do so. Another concern, which is more frequent, deer in roadways. Deer can dart out quickly and often travel in numbers, so if one crosses, another may be right behind. Going slowly, especially at night, can help. And this one is news and more from Bolton. Cops and robbers clinic hooks new anglers in Bolton. Kids, adults, and first-time anglers gathered at Bowers Spring Conservation Area July 23rd to learn the basics of fishing during the annual Cops and Bobbers Learn to Fish Clinic, a community event hosted by the Bolton Police Department, Bolton Conservation Department, and the Massachusetts Division of Fisheries and Wildlife's Angler Education Program. The free clinic provided fishing equipment, terminal tackle and live bait, while instructors taught participants everything from casting and baiting a hook to fishing techniques. Organizers emphasized that the program was open to people of all ages and experience levels. What a really great evening, said Bolton Police Department, in a social media post following the event. It was great seeing people of all ages learn the basics, cast a line, enjoy the outdoors, and most importantly, have fun. The department also thanked the Bolton Conservation Department, Mass Wildlife's Angler Education Program, and the volunteers who helped organize the event. Participants echoed those sentiments, describing the clinic as welcoming, educational, and enjoyable. Several attendees said the event gave them the confidence to begin fishing on their own. One participant, who had intended to attend for years, said the clinic exceeded expectations by teaching not only fishing techniques, but also the importance of fishing licenses and conservation. Others expressed hope that the program will return next year after missing this year's event. And that was news and more from Bolton. And this one is news and more from Stowe. Events bring Stowe residents together. A number of recent and upcoming events give the Stowe community a chance to gather and enjoy family activities together. Recent Neshoba graduate Katerina Romano offered Stowe residents an opportunity to make their mark on the historic town mural on Hartley Road between Center and Hale Schools. Dozens of community members turned out on July 25th to help Katerina, who developed and planned the project, for the Girl Scout Gold Award. Coming up on Tuesday, August 4th, and are we... Beyond all that, is hosting this event and inviting Stowe residents and others from surrounding communities to visit the center school grounds to enjoy a wide variety of activities. And here's another one here, Bike for the Woods. Hosted by the Stowe Conservation Trust, the annual Bike for the Woods will be held on Sunday, the 9th of August, beginning at the rear entrance of Center School off Hartley Road. While hardcore cyclists ride the 37 and 64-mile routes, organizers have specifically designed routes as short as 5 miles to allow the youngest cyclists to take part. All proceeds benefit Stowe Conservation Trust efforts to protect our farms and forests. Let's take a quick break, and we'll send it over to Bob with more news.
Audio Journal, the radio reading service of Central Massachusetts, serving visually and print-impaired listeners since 1987. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is Bob Brady back with Audio Journal. The time is 3:15. I have articles from the Marlboro Hudson Community Advocate. Marlboro Councilor eyes geothermal energy to power city, by Evan Walsh. David Doucette, a Marlboro City Councilor, recently penned a letter arguing that Marlboro should consider starting a municipal thermal utility. The City Council on July 20th unanimously agreed to place the letter on file, with Doucette asking his colleagues to co-sign. According to Doucette, Marlboro should develop more locally sourced renewable energy, such as geothermal and thermal exchange networks. This way, he says, the city could cut down on its fossil fuel usage and the controversy surrounding non-renewable energy sources. Oil prices are spiraling out of control due to global demand, while fossil fuels come from volatile regions of the world. Our dependence on these fuels is a danger to our modern civilization and the environment. Our nation's demand for fossil fuels justifies the wars being fought over them, while the extraction of fossil fuels continues to disregard human rights and cause environmental damage around the world, Doucette wrote. Switching to neighborhood energy reduces our dependence on fossil fuels by replacing them with locally sourced alternatives. Geothermal energy uses the Earth's natural heat. Wells containing a closed loop of pipe are drilled 300 to 600 feet deep into the surface, storing heat in the summer, then drawing out heat in the winter. Wells can be drilled hundreds at a time, with thousands sometimes needed for an effective system. There are already thermal energy networks in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Framingham, according to Doucette. Doucette wrote, geothermal energy delivers significant savings in heating and cooling for buildings compared with fossil fuels, benefiting families and reducing operating costs for businesses. Property owners with wells can sell their excess thermal capacity to the utility for use in adjacent buildings or neighborhoods. The challenge is scaling these thermal exchange networks, but it's not the technology that needs to be innovative, it's the business model. While Doucette admits build-out could take decades, he thinks a feasibility study could be an easy step in the right direction. In April, the City Council voted 10-1 to send a communication to the Climate Resiliency Committee to develop a feasibility study for a thermal exchange network utility. Working toward energy independence is essential to preserving our liberty, just as our ancestors harnessed river power to run mills and secure victory in the Civil War. We must harness geothermal energy to safeguard our future and build our energy independence, said Doucette. Marlboro can create a municipal utility like Hudson did in 1897, utilizing technology pioneered in Framingham. Developing a thermal energy network utility frees our city from the shackles of the fossil-fueled colossus that powers our civilization and poisons our planet. Marlboro's Wayside Athletic Club experiencing a renaissance, by Mickey Baca. When Nick and Eva Waller set out to expand their badminton academy, they were looking for a place where young athletes could train at the highest level. What they found was a much bigger opportunity, the chance to revive one of Marlboro's longtime community institutions. In fall 2024, the couple purchased the 47-year-old Wayside Athletic Club, a sprawling 70,000-square-foot facility that had seen better days. "People said we were nuts," said Nick, who described the experience of taking over the club as trial by fire. Nearly 2 years later, membership is growing, renovations are well underway, and the Wallers are beginning to see their vision take shape. At the center of that vision is Hello Birdie Badminton, the academy Nick and Eva launched in Westboro in 2020. Today, the program operates inside Wayside and serves about 100 to 150 students between the ages of 6 and 18. The club's 12 newly installed badminton courts are in near constant use. Hello Birdie offers junior and adult classes 8 to 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. Nick and Eva each coach roughly 70 hours each week, a demanding schedule made even more challenging by the fact that they are also raising their one-year-old son. For the Wallers, however, badminton is more than a business. It's a lifelong passion. Eva is a 13-time U.S. national champion who represented the United States at the 2008 and 2016 Olympic Games. Nick grew up in Natick and competed as a member of the U.S. national team. Together, they are working to create the kind of high-performance training environment they believe can develop future national champions and potentially the next generation of Olympians. Their students compete in USA badminton tournaments and international events. Last year, 13 Hello Birdie athletes earned medals. The Academy's other milestones include a student winning a Pan Am championship and another capturing a national title. Once dismissed by many Americans as a casual backyard activity, badminton has grown rapidly as a competitive and professional sport. The East Coast has become one of the sport's most important U.S. hubs, Nick said, with a growing number of athletes pursuing serious training and tournament competition. The sport is far more demanding than it may appear. A shuttlecock can travel at speeds approaching 300 miles per hour, making it one of the fastest moving objects in sports. Players rely on explosive speed, agility, power, coordination, and split-second reflexes. Beyond badminton, Wayside includes 3 indoor tennis courts, 4 racquetball courts, indoor and outdoor swimming pools, and a fully equipped fitness center. Nick and Eva saw the potential to bring Hello Birdie's energy and high standards environment to the club's swimming, tennis, fitness, and personal training programs. "We want to provide the best services and top-notch facilities at an approachable price," Nick said. Wayside's longtime general manager, Brian Lynch, has been helping Nick and Eva navigate the transition. Nick said Lynch has been essential as the couple learns the broader business of operating a full-service athletic club. The Wallers' plans for Wayside are built around 2 main goals. The first is to provide young athletes with the coaching, training, and support they need to excel in whatever sport they choose, and to create pathways toward high-performance competition for those who want to pursue it. The second is broader, to provide a welcoming community where people of all ages can remain active, build healthy habits, and age gracefully. Wayside currently serves about 1,500 members. Many of its junior members are involved in badminton, while high school and college-age members frequently use the fitness center. The pool attracts swimmers across a wide range of ages, and middle-aged and older members participate in complementary programs, including yoga, boxing, and group exercise classes. The club's tennis and swimming programs also offer opportunities for recreational competition. Transforming the club has required more than expanding programs. One of the Waller's greatest challenges has been changing the public perception of Wayside. For years, the facility suffered from deferred maintenance and a lack of visible investment. The previous owners were not regularly on site, Nick said, and many areas of the club had gone too long without meaningful updates. The Wallers knew they needed to show members, not simply tell them, that the club was entering a new chapter. They began with the lobby. Renovating the club's entrance was a deliberate first step designed to prove to members that we are serious about this, Nick said. The club has since turned its attention to the fitness center and locker rooms, with additional improvements planned throughout the building. The ultimate goal is a fully renovated facility, but Nick stressed that renovation is not a one-time project with a finish line. Once we're finished, we're not done, he said. We want members to feel they're looked after. We're never satisfied. It's not in our nature to be stagnant. Members have noticed the difference. Many have personally thanked Nick for following through on promises and making visible improvements to the facility. For Nick and Eva, the transformation of Wayside began with a simple piece of business advice. Do what you know. They started with badminton, the sport they understand best and the foundation of their careers. From there, they began extending the same discipline, ambition, and attention to performance across the rest of the club. What began as a search for more badminton courts has become something much larger, an effort to restore a community landmark, create new opportunities for athletes, and build a club that can serve Marlboro families for generations to come. Hudson Searching for Next Town Manager by Paul Hopkins. The Hudson Select Board is looking for people to help select a new town manager. Residents had until August 3rd to file an interest card. Select Board Vice Chair Lauren DeBruhl said in a social media post that the entire process will take about 4 months. My goal was to expedite as much as possible, she said. We are seeking interest cards for a 7-member search committee to be appointed by the Select Board. We are also starting the process of selecting a consulting group to assist us in this search. Town Manager Thomas Gregory announced in May that he would not seek renewal of his contract when it expires next year. Gregory joined the town in 2021. He had previously served in town governments in Shrewsbury, Walpole, and Spencer. Gregory's announcement followed a performance review. Select Board Chair Stephen Sharrock said at the time that it was, to his knowledge, the first instance a performance review had been conducted for the town manager position. Coincidentally, the official title for the job only recently became town manager. After town meeting approval, it took an act of the state legislature to make the change, and the bill amending the town charter was signed on July 7th. While the select board and other town officials routinely referred to the position as town manager in the past, it was technically called the executive assistant. An item from the police log for Marlboro for July 15th. Arrested Gabriel P. Mejia, 26, of Framingham, for operating an MV, a motor vehicle, with license suspended or revoked, disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, uninsured motor vehicle, speeding, rate of speed exceeding posted limit, unregistered motor vehicle, operate motor vehicle with registration suspended or revoked. And now, let's take a listen to another public service announcement, and then Tim will be back.
The following is a public service announcement from the Worcester, Massachusetts Association for the Blind Support Group. Though vision and blind persons in the Worcester area are fortunate to have a support group sponsored by the Massachusetts Association for the Blind in Worcester, the group meets monthly at the Worcester Senior Center. The group provides information and resources to assist with daily living, assistive technology, transportation, and friendship. For more information, please call Marion at 508-754-0672. Again, that's Marion at 508-754-0672.
And this is Tim, back with you. It's 3:30 here at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. This is Stowe Celebrates 25 Years of Community Preservation. This year marks 25 years since Stowe voters adopted the Community Preservation Act, the CPA, creating a dedicated local funding source to preserve the community's historic, natural, recreational, and housing resources. Over the past quarter century, CPA funding has protected open space and farmland, preserved historic buildings and documents, expanded recreation opportunities, and supported affordable housing projects that enhance the quality of life in Stowe. As we celebrate this important milestone, the Stowe Community Preservation Committee is updating the Community Preservation Plan and invites residents to help identify priorities that will guide future CPA investments. And upcoming Community Preservation Committee meetings, Monday, August 3rd, that's behind us, Monday, August 17th, and Monday, August, September 21st. At these meetings, residents will have the opportunity to learn about 25 years of community preservation accomplishments in Stowe, hear about proposed updates to the Community Preservation Plan, share ideas about future priorities for historic preservation, open space, recreation, affordable housing, and agricultural preservation, help shape the next 25 years of community preservation in Stowe. The Community Preservation Plan guides how CPA funds are invested in our community. Public participation helps ensure that future investments reflect the needs and values of Stowe residents. Meeting times, locations, agendas, and Zoom information will be posted on the town website. Clinton Savings Bank celebrates 175 years with a continued commitment to Bolton, by Kristen DeJean. As Clinton Savings Bank celebrates its 175th anniversary this year, bank officials say its commitment to Bolton extends well beyond financial services, with decades of community involvement, charitable giving, and financial education. Founded in 1851, Clinton Savings Bank has marked the milestone with year-long community initiatives, including scholarships, charitable donations, volunteerism, and customer appreciation events throughout central Massachusetts. During the second quarter of 2026 alone, the bank contributed more than $20,000 to local schools, youth sports programs, and community organizations and awarded $1,000 scholarships to graduating seniors at 8 area high schools. The anniversary celebration will continue through the third quarter with more than $23,000 in charitable giving. Support for local chambers of commerce, small businesses, and community fairs, and its annual back-to-school supply drive. We first opened our doors in Bolton in 1981 with our branch located in the office building complex on Main Street, said Mary T. Dean, president and CEO of Clinton Savings Bank. In 2015, we relocated across the street to our current location at 562 Main Street, where we continue to proudly serve the community. Dean said supporting local organizations has remained central to the bank's mission. Giving back has always been an important part of who we are, she said. Over the past 2 years, we have contributed more than $14,000 in monetary donations to Bolton organizations and causes. Clinton Savings Bank employees are regularly taking part in community events in Bolton, including the Halloween Walk, Easter Egg Hunt, Bolton Fair, Children's Fair, Career Fair, and Neshoba Regional High School's Reality Fair. The bank also promotes financial literacy through school partnerships. We offer in-school banking programs at several locations, at several local elementary schools, Dean said. We currently partner with Florence Sawyer Elementary School and are looking forward to resuming the program this fall so that the students can once again benefit from this valuable financial education opportunity. Dean said the bank's 175th anniversary is an opportunity to recognize the communities that have supported it throughout its history. Celebrating 175 years isn't just about looking back. It's about recognizing the people who have made this milestone possible, Dean said. Every scholarship we award, every youth team we sponsor, every local event we support, and every opportunity we have to bring people together is our way of saying thank you. We are grateful to be your community bank, and we look forward to serving this region for generations to come. We're just getting started. Stowe COA brings lucky locals to see the tall ships in Boston. And this is by Christopher DeLiso. In what may have been the summer's most eagerly anticipated Stowe COA event, the council's expert drivers brought 27 Stowe residents on a maritime adventure of historical proportions in Boston, the viewing of the tall ships on the city's harbor, during the Sail Boston Week that began with a massive flotilla of 60 vessels from the world over earlier this month. While many Bostonians and tourists watch the tall ships only from downtown locations like the Seaport, Charlestown, the North End, and so on, the lucky Stowe passengers got to enjoy the majestic sight of these historic ships from the water, adding a cool and refreshing feeling to the experience on what was a beautiful, sunny summer's day. On Monday, July 13th, these passengers were thus taken on the Odyssey, that is, the pleasure boat run by Boston Harbor City Cruises, as part of the Tall Ships Lunch Cruise Program. Passing under the Grateful Arch at Rose Wharf in Boston, the visitors boarded their boat for a two-hour early lunch tour. The buffet lunch was complemented by a full cash bar. The Stowe guests, who could also enjoy the sea breezes and close-up photo opportunities of the tall ships, moored strikingly around the harbor, also enjoyed learning from a guide who narrated intriguing details of individual vessels. According to the COA staff surveyed by The Independent, everyone had a great time out on the water. The event was not only of value because it provided a chance to get out of the summer heat and be cool on the sea. It also afforded a unique and inexpensive way for seniors to enjoy ringing in America's 250th birthday in the company of friends and beautiful sailing ships from around the world, led by Boston's own USS Constitution, the oldest commissioned ship still afloat anywhere. It was truly a wonderful day, said local resident Ann Sadler, who enjoyed the day out with her husband and friends. Another town resident, Daphna Norton, added that the cruise on the Odyssey was wonderful. The narration was very informative about the ships and the harbor. The lively atmosphere on board was fueled by the chef-curated lunch and varied cocktails. Norton also noted that the lunch buffet was excellent and available for most of the cruise. This year's event, which included ships from as far away as Colombia, Ecuador, Argentina, and India, was held under the rubric of what was officially dubbed Sail 250. According to the Sail Boston website, this is a global gathering of tall ships and military ships to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the founding of the United States. This year's event was special as Boston was chosen as the final stop in honor of the bicentennial of a naval tour that had started in late May in New Orleans. From there, the tall ships came up the eastern seaboard to stop in Norfolk, Virginia, and Baltimore in June, before passing through New York City for the July 4th festivities. Some of the 60 vessels from around 20 countries were made available for educational tours, and the international sailors made an appearance in Boston's seaport. On Saturday, July 11th, NBC Boston reported on the arrival of the tall ships sailing in a flotilla in front of the city's harbor to mark the start of Sail Boston 2026. With so many incredible vessels from around the world, Sail Boston expected over 1 million visitors to throng the streets, which caused tighter security, traffic, and some street closures. Given all the traffic going into Boston to see the fabled ships, the ride from Stowe was almost an odyssey in itself. Yet Stowe's COA drivers arrived in just enough time to get local seniors onto the boat and then parked a ways away, returning themselves just in time to embark. Stowe's passengers expressed their gratitude for this service. The COA van drivers did an excellent job directing everyone to the buses in such a busy location, said Daphne Norton. And this one is Stowe Firefighting Cisterns, Bolton Infrastructure Receiving Funds in State Budget by Kristen DeJean. Stowe and Bolton are slated to receive funding for local infrastructure projects under the fiscal year 2027 state budget, which was signed into law earlier this month by Governor Maura Healey. The budget includes investments in education, transportation, housing, and health care, while raising no new taxes. Healey signed the budget on July 9th without vetoes or amendments. In Stowe, the earmark will support the installation of improvement in firefighting cisterns, which provide water storage for emergency response in areas without access to municipal water systems. Bolton's funding will be used for rural infrastructure needs, including culvert improvements. This budget reflects the Commonwealth's commitment to our towns and cities and to the families and residents who rely on our education, transportation, health care, housing, and workforce development programs, Hogan said. It positions Massachusetts equitably for the competitive and economic challenges that lie ahead. All of these investments are focused on making life better, making life easier for people in Massachusetts, and making it more affordable to live here, and to work here, and to raise children. This also makes us more competitive for our employers, for economic growth, particularly as we compare ourselves to other states. Neshoba students take part in Week on Beacon Hill by Kristen DeJean. Neshoba Regional High School students Lucy Ryan and Sydney Lemaire of Stowe spent part of their summer learning how Massachusetts state government works through Representative Kate Hogan's annual Week on Beacon Hill program. The students were among eight local residents who spent a week in Hogan's State House office, where they observed the legislative process, explored careers in public service, and met with elected officials and government professionals. The program gives high school students an opportunity to experience the Capitol firsthand by attending formal legislative sessions and committee briefings while learning about the roles and responsibilities of legislators, constitutional officers, advocates, and public employees. This program is a wonderful way for younger students to experience the workings of our government, Hogan said. When I meet with them, I often hear how surprised they are by how much work gets done by the legislature, how collegial members of both parties are in dealing with issues of the day, and how you can make a difference for young community, for your community and Commonwealth. All great lessons. During the week, Rain and Lemaire toured the State House, observed legislative proceedings, and gained a behind-the-scenes look at how state government serves residents across the Commonwealth. Joining the Neshoba students were Hudson High School graduate Julian Elke and Advanced Math and Science Academy students Dominic Rodriguez and Akshay Giariola, both of Hudson, along with Hudson High School students Will Burgess, Nicholas Lane, and Bridget O'Keefe. Hogan said the annual program is designed to introduce students to the legislative process while encouraging civic engagement and highlighting the many career opportunities available in government and public service. By providing direct access to the day-to-day work of the legislature, the program aims to help students better understand how laws are made and how individuals can make a difference in their communities. Let's take another short break. We'll pass it back over to Bob.
Hi, my name's Owen Devlin, and this is my story. When my doctor told me I was losing my vision, I was devastated. I worried about my future. How would I attend college, find a great job, start a family, or even travel around my own neighborhood? Luckily, my doctor also told me about the Mass Commission for the Blind. They connected me and my family to a counselor who helped us to set a vision for my future, one that included assistive technology to allow me to go to school and find a meaningful job, a white cane to help me navigate, and even tips on how to use Google Maps on my mobile phone. I found out that losing my vision wasn't the end of the world.
If your loved one is blind or visually impaired, find out if they are eligible to register for services. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.
This is Bob Brady back with Audio Journal. The time is 3:46. I'm going to continue with articles from the Marlboro Hudson Community Advocate. Pets allegedly found neglected in Marlboro apartment. A Marlboro woman is being charged after several animals living in squalor were located in her apartment. At about 7:09 p.m. on June 26, Marlboro Police Department officers were dispatched to an apartment on Royal Crest Drive after a report that pets had been left unattended at the residence for over 1 week. The property manager requested the police response. Upon arrival, officers were informed that the tenant had been renting the apartment since May 31st and that over the past several days, neighbors had been complaining about a foul odor coming from the apartment. In police reports, officers stated that the odor of animal feces and urine was so strong that it could be detected from across the hallway before the apartment door was opened. Property management had been unable to enter the apartment without cause, but a notice was left on the apartment's door advising the tenant that workers would be entering the apartment to perform electrical work. After a 24-hour notice, personnel entered the apartment to complete the scheduled work. The Marlboro Police Department was called after the workers discovered a terrible scene. The apartment was allegedly in disarray, and two dogs and two kittens who appeared to be hungry and neglected were present, according to court documents. The odor was due to a buildup of animal waste, officers noted in a report. The floors were reportedly covered in feces, and some appeared dry, indicating it had been there for quite some time. There was allegedly no furniture in the apartment, and police reported that there was no food or water available to the animals. Officers reported that there was one Great Pyrenees puppy with feces matted into its fur, one adult Bichon Frise, which had dried feces around its back legs, and two kittens with feces embedded into their fur. The responding officer observed three unopened cans of cat food on the counter and fed them to the animals. The food was quickly gobbled up, indicating the animals were hungry. The tenant, identified as Jacqueline Halla, 34, was unreachable for several hours. Marlboro Police Department officials contacted her workplace, and Halla was reached. She said she had been at the apartment earlier that morning and that she slept on the unit's floor, statements that officials noted were inconsistent with the uninhabitable condition of the apartment. Halla asked when she could see the animals again, but the animal control officer and code enforcement department took custody of them. Halla also argued that the police did not have the right to enter the apartment, but officers noted that their involvement was appropriate, considering it occurred after the lawful entrance of the maintenance workers. Halla is being charged with cruelty to animals. She was expected to be arraigned in Marlboro District Court on July 30th. Let's see. They're doing difficult things. Hudson Teens Put to the Test at Police Department's Youth Academy by Paul Hopkins. The Hudson Police Department is showing residents what it's like to be an officer. Now in its 21st year, the Hudson Police Department's Youth Academy has become a staple of the town. This year, the department is challenging more than 100 6th, 7th, and 8th graders as part of the annual program. Over the course of a week, recruits spend a total of 40 hours completing physical tasks and learning about the skills needed to be a police officer. Another 54 were scheduled for the academy's second week. Each day starts with physical training, a mile run, and lots of calisthenics, said Hudson Police Department Detective Chad Krogan, who runs the academy. We've got them doing push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, and then we transition to the daily life of a police officer. It was hands-on, quite literally. We've been teaching them handcuffing, de-escalation skills, and communication skills, said Krogan. Canine officers and a life flight crew from UMass Memorial Medical Center were part of the academy. The kids love that, Krogan said. Many teens were back for their second or third experience, according to Ayla DeVoe and Cameron Barber. The pair are freshmen at the Advanced Math and Science Academy in Marlboro and said they enjoyed the experience so much they're doing it for a third year. The morning run and exercise was tough, but it got easier, they agreed. Kids are sometimes surprised to learn they can do more than they thought, said Krogan. This is a hard week. We push them, and they're doing difficult things. Sometimes they fail, but they get up and try again. This year, a crew from Coastal Ambulance explained their job and demonstrated how a stretcher works. Officers created a crime scene for processing, teaching their students about fingerprint identification, and recruits participated in firearms exercises using paintball guns. Teens also learned about the dangers of impaired driving. They aren't quite at driving age, but Krogan said it's important to instill good ethics and values early. The program is also about getting to know the police officers. The kids know me from being in the school, said Krogan, who is the second school resource officer. But now they know many, many more officers, and they can engage them when they see them on patrol. It creates good bonds and relationships. And now a letter to the editor. This is from Janet Habermel of Hudson. Dear editor, I was appalled to learn that my representative, Lori Trahan, voted to pass the Combating Organized Retail Crime Act, CORCA, H.R. 2853. The bill needed a two-thirds majority to clear the House, and her vote helped it get there. On its surface, CORCA sounds like a reasonable measure against retail theft, but buried inside is one of the largest expansions of ICE's power in years, a new national law enforcement data hub housed within ICE, led by a director handpicked by the ICE administrator and given sweeping authority to collect and share Americans' personal data with almost no limits and no oversight. That's not a minor provision. It's a Trojan horse. And it raises an obvious question. Did the representatives who voted for it actually read what they were passing? We elect our representatives to reflect our values, not to wave through unchecked expansions of federal surveillance power buried in unrelated legislation. I urge everyone to watch closely what your representatives and senators are voting on in Congress. Read the bills, ask questions, make sure their votes reflect your views, because too often what's marketed as one thing turns out to be something else entirely. And again, that was by Janice Habermel of Hudson. St. Mary's names new CEO Jim Petkowitz by Evan Walsh. How rooted in Marlboro is Jim Petkowitz? After playing football at Littleton High School and Providence College, Petkowitz started competing for the Marlboro Shamrocks, the legendary New England Football League team. He played in over 100 games, won the national championship with the team, was named to the All-80s team, and played wide receiver. He keeps a Shamrocks helmet next to his workspace and values relationships he forged with teammates and Bob Kays. "We won a lot of games," Petkowitz laughed. Through his football days are over, Petkowitz has found similar success in finance. In May, he was named the CEO of St. Mary's Credit Union, an organization that continues to follow principles set forth when it was founded in 1913, serving the community, working for members, and understanding residents' needs. "I am honored to step into the role of president and CEO of St. Mary's Credit Union," said Petkowitz. "This organization means so much to me, not just because of the work we do, but because of the people who make it possible every day. I deeply believe in our mission and the imperative we have on our members and the communities we serve. I look forward to leading the team as we continue to focus on delivering exceptional service." This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you'd like a hard copy of our program schedule in large print or braille, call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org. This is Bob Brady, along with Tim Elms. Thank you for listening.
This is Bird Note. What are these strange clicking sounds? Is this a secret message in Morse code? They're the calls of a male buff-breasted sandpiper courting a female on their breeding grounds far north of the Arctic Circle. He raises his wings, flashing their silvery white undersides as he sings his clicking serenade. A bit smaller than a robin, the buff-breasted sandpiper is strikingly handsome, rich tawny brown overall, with dark markings on the back and the light-colored breast for which it's named. And it's a shapely bird. Fine. Delicate, almost. It'll spend much of the year on grasslands in Argentina, migrating to the Arctic in late spring for breeding, then heading south again in late summer or early fall. In the lower 48, September's a good time to look for this long-distance traveler. During migration, they show a distinct preference for grassy expanses such as pastures and rice fields. Buff-breasted sandpipers are one of our scarcest shorebirds, and they face threats from pesticides and the loss of habitat. Joint conservation among the U.S., Canada, and Argentina under the Migratory Species Convention could greatly benefit this bird. But even small actions, like supporting growers of organic rice, can help secure the future of a threatened species, like the buff-breasted sandpiper. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
What's your vision?
My vision is 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye and zero vision in the left eye.
20/200 at best on my left eye, and on my right eye, I cannot.
No, I mean, what's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
My vision is employment opportunities for all, including people with disabilities.
My vision is for all of my students to dream big.
That he become fully independent.
For my patients to live their best lives.
What's your vision?
What's your vision?
What is your vision?
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, our vision is clear. We believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/mcb.